Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
But if I'm going to be vulnerable, that means I'm open to all of these things that you're going to have to say about what I have to say. And if I start living like that, I'm probably going to make different choices, right? Because if I do something bad and then I'm going to be able to talk about it, my life is going to get a lot harder.
How you day? That was the voice of Scott Shoot. Now, mindfulness. How many of you know what mindfulness is? Some of you may have tuned in to the meditation apps. Some of you may use that to calm yourself down. I certainly do. I use Calm and I use Breathe. But do you know why it's important for you to meditate? Why it's important for you to be mindful? Two different things. But how can mindfulness really give you insight into your body? How can it give you insight into what you need to do and how you connect in the workplace and in any other system you participate in? How can you be present? That's where Scott comes into play here. And now Scott is someone who has done amazing work at LinkedIn, so much so that they created a job for him, head of mindfulness for him at LinkedIn. Think about that. Think about how effective you have to be for a company to create a job for you. Mind blowing. But We had a lovely conversation, and this is one of my favorite episodes, so I hope you enjoy it. I hope you sit down, sip some tea, and just breathe. Remember to breathe, listen, and take every piece of insight that you can from the episode. His book is also going to be in the show notes. Make sure you check it out. All right? Enjoy the episode. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of As Told by Nomads. And today's guest is Scott Shoot. Now, Scott is the head of mindfulness and compassion programs at LinkedIn and has been an active advocate for customers and employees in the technology space for over 20 years, with roles ranging from sales, customer advocacy, customer service leadership, and many, many more things. At the time of this podcast, by the time you listen to this podcast, this book would have been out. And the book is called The Full Body Yes. Change your work and your world from the inside out. These are the things that we'll be discussing in today's episode. And hopefully, as you listen, you pick up the book, you share with your family and friends and students or whatever, component and circle of influence you have, and you discuss how you can change your work and your world from inside out. Welcome to the show, Scott.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here.
Pleasure is mine. And I have so many things that I'm intrigued by. I'm very into mindfulness. It's something that I started picking up in the last couple of years, especially with as I became more familiar with some of the traumas that I had gone through as a child and even as an adult. But I want you to tell me what you mean by changing your work and world from the inside out.
We're going to go right there.
I mean, it is. That was the first thing.
Yeah. Let's do it. Yeah. All right. So lots of studies, lots of research around, look, our happiness is not the stuff that happens to us, right? Hmm. It's how we react to the stuff that happens to us. In other words, let's back up. You ever have a really, really fantastic day where, like, no matter what happened to you, you felt like you were on top of it and you could just thrive?
Yes.
Yeah. Have you ever had just the other side of that where, like, no matter what happened, you just ended up in a crying mess in the corner?
Sometimes I couldn't even get out of bed.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. We've all had those days. Now, what was the difference between these 2 days? It was probably mostly what was going on inside your head, right? It wasn't necessarily the stuff happening in our lives. And so happiness is an inside job, and how we view our world, how we view our work starts with us. Now, of course, outside circumstances are going to dictate a little bit of that, maybe a lot of that. So in other words, a day that I get fired is not going to be as good probably as a day that I get promoted. But over time, we all kind of revert back to this natural, you know, set point in our life, this kind of happiness set point. So if you're a 3 out of 10 or a 9 out of 10 in the happiness scale, the stuff that happens to you day to day will change that a little bit. But over time, you'll go back to that point. Hmm. And the good news is you can move that point. We can learn to be more optimistic. We can learn to be happier. These are skills that you can teach. That's what I mean by change your work and your world from the inside out.
So knowing your baseline, if you will, is essentially what you're talking about there, and understanding that.
It starts with knowing ourselves.
Self-awareness. Okay. Self-awareness.
Yeah. Right. So I outline, we'll go there. I have outlined 4 parts in my book.
You know, of course you did.
So the first part is knowing yourself, right? And so Knowing what your baseline is. And most people know, it's like, you kind of know, like, am I generally an optimistic or a pessimistic person? So know yourself. The second part is to love yourself, to really like identify that deepest part of you that is pure, that part that knows. And the third step is to really take accountability, to take responsibility for our own lives, right? To do the hard work. Because look, it's a lot easier to be a victim than it is to be a player in our own lives. Yeah. And then the fourth step is with others, right? To take those same 3 steps for other people, to know, to become aware of others, to love others, and then, you know, take action on behalf of them.
I'll share a story or a few. So at the time my first book was coming out, Use Your Difference to Make a Difference. And I was in a very toxic relationship at the time. And a lot of things were happening for me. Typically, right? You'd be happy, you'd be successful, you're going on tour, you're doing all these things. But I was so depressed. And it was one of the weirdest things I had ever felt because I remember I was in the middle, I was about to do something for Viacom, and I was saying to myself, my book is out. I should be happy. I've worked really hard for this. I'm really proud of this project, but I'm just more worried about what's happening here in my relationship. And I was having panic attacks. I suffered from anxiety attacks and panic attacks. And then it just kept happening more and more. And it was what initially got me into therapy. But I remember that feeling because you talked about the juxtaposition of promotion and getting fired. But in that case, what traditional, traditional metrics for success were there, but internally I was just struggling.
Can we talk about success for a bit?
Yes, please.
I think we are measuring success wrong.
I agree.
I talk about, I think sometimes, what I've said is we're climbing the wrong mountain. I actually think the mountain is a false peak. And what I mean by that is we measure our success by things like our career, how much money do we have, the title we have, the amount of prestige, the car we drive, and all of these things are externally validated. In other words, we're measuring our success on what we think other people think about us.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. But the true success is our connections, our relationships, our health, our own state of mind, our own well-being. In fact, your story was a perfect example of it. From the outside world, you had it all going on, right?
Yeah.
Your book was coming out, you're successful, you should be happy.
Right.
But your connection, like the thing that is closest to you was not where you wanted to be, and you were miserable.
I was. I certainly was. Actually, you'll be surprised because you study this. But so I shared with you that I'm from Nigeria, but I don't know if you know that I grew up in 5 countries and 4 continents. But the first 9 years of my life was in and out of 3 military regimes. 2 of them were dictatorships. And my name, Tayo, short for Akintayo, which means a warrior's brother's joy. It's the Yoruba culture. But in that moment, the first 9 years of my life, a lot of what I, shoot-ins, kill-ins, all these things, a lot of it was a testament to my parents. As I'm writing my second book right now, where I'm reflecting on those experiences, I found that I was living into the second part of my name, joy. And to me, joy is something I study because it's more internal. It's confused for happiness and is internal. But I was... Yeah. finding a lot of moments where I was just content with who I was in those first 9 years of my life, despite the suppression and oppression that was going on. And it's the opposite of what I just shared earlier, where because, you know, obviously as a kid, you're naive sometimes, but also you have all these unbridled optimism and because of your environment. But it wasn't until I moved to Burkina Faso, which is French speaking country in West Africa. And then I started to see, you know, people react to me like, oh, they would point out moments about my blackness, your nose, your hair, all these things. And I was like, oh, I'm not happy. But I was 10 and 11. But I started to really pick up on those things once I started letting external opinions of myself, you know, affect me. Of course, I was too young to understand it, but that's what was happening.
That's right. That's right. But inside you, it sounds like you were wired, or let's say programmed, like you were born in a certain way. And turns out about 40% of our happiness is based on genetics. Like we just come, I won't say wired, because I think I'd say programmed. It's in our DNA. Sonia Lyubomirsky in The How of Happiness writes about kind of the factors that make up happiness. And some of it is genetic. And so you came kind of pre-programmed that way. Wow. Now you mentioned something interesting, which is like you were surrounded by war, you're surrounded by chaos. And still as a kid, like you felt this optimism, or this happiness. I think there's something really powerful about being able to hold it all, right? So there's these experiences, like some people look at the news and say, how can I be happy in a world where X, Y, and Z can live, right? So I should feel miserable too. But there's room for us to feel all of these things, right? Yeah. Because look, even in the middle of a war, there's babies being born. There's people getting married. There's birthdays to celebrate. There's people graduating. And it's not that we're putting our head in the sand and ignoring all the hard things. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is when there are things to celebrate or when we feel good, like step into that feeling of good. Mm-hmm. Because when we share gratitude, when we share our love, when we share our happiness, when we share our joy, it makes us stronger to be able to deal with those hard things, those very real hard things that are going on.
No, you're so right. And that, I mean, it's something I'm definitely coming to learn and something I've allowed myself to feel, because you know, generally in the field of work that I'm in, I'm constantly holding space for many of these type of things, you know, with diversity, equity, inclusion. But last year was a unique experience. And, you know, we saw the world got to see what was happening. And I allowed myself to be fully angry. For the first time in years, and which was going back to stuff I was talking about in childhood. And I used to just suppress part of my anger because I felt like I needed to, but I was like, no, you can be angry and allow yourself to feel that. But then, you know, you can turn that into something. So I'm learning a lot about different emotions and unlearning some things about myself that I might have programmed. But
fantastic.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, the anger can be channeled, right? If the anger is channeled into a good cause, it can be super useful. When it just eats at you and hurts your own mental well-being, then it's not helping anybody.
Destructive. So I'm curious about this. How can we discover what is important to us and why? Because that seems to be the core of what you're saying, the discovering what will fuel our inner joy and happiness, essentially.
Sure. How do we discover that? That's a great question. You know, I think that most of us probably already know, you know, you feel it in your body, right? So when you talk about doing something that you have to do at work, as an example, or something you do in life, and as you're talking about it, what's the feeling you get in your body, right? And there are some things in all of our jobs, in all of our work, in all of our lives, there's some things that, quote, light us up.
Yeah.
And there's some things that are just a drag on us, right?
That's right.
And we kind of know that, like, if you don't know, just as you say it, just notice how you feel in your body. Your body knows. And then over time, over the course of your life, over the course of your career, just see if you can shape more and more and more of your career or your life into those things that feel good. So I'll give you an example in my own life. So I got an engineering degree out of college. But when I went to go search for jobs, there were all these different jobs. Some of them were super technical. But the one I ended up choosing was a job in sales, to do technical sales. Because what I knew is that I love to talk to people. I love building relationships. I love, you know, that idea of connection. And that was more exciting to me than writing code. And that's just one example. But each time I had a choice in my career, it was choosing the thing that lit me up. And so, of course, it's much harder than that on the ground. But that's the simple premise.
Yeah. You're so good at this. I can see why you wrote a book on this. This is so, it's so important though. You know, you need to understand your body. It's one of the things I've been learning with mindfulness, know why you react a certain way and what's happening with your body. But
yeah,
I live in New York City, as we shared. It's, you know, often known for its go, go, go nature, which is mimics my personality. Yeah. And there are certain, you know, good things about that. But at the same time, the other side of that could be that you forget to be present, and when you're not That's present, right. You ignore many things. And so those are things that I'm figuring out. Okay, so your book is coming out at a very important time. We have been experiencing and observing many types of leaderships, right? Yes. You know, and people have different opinions on what type of leadership is desired throughout the world, especially as it relates to pandemic and, you know, race issues or inclusion issues or any of these things. And the word that comes to mind oftentimes is a compassionate leader, right? Yes. And you do this very well at LinkedIn and with other companies. I wonder if you could define what a compassionate leader is, and maybe sure. just speak to the state of affairs as you see it, you know, based on your experience in the world.
Sure. The simplest way I think about compassionate leaders or compassionate companies or organizations, in the most simple terms, is when we move from me to we. Right. So, you know, as a person, if I move away from just my own selfish, just thinking about me, and I start to think about everybody else around me, look, including myself, I'm going to be more successful at work and successful in life. And leaders and companies are no different. So a successful company is one who looks at all of their stakeholders, not just their shareholders. So in other words, they're thinking about their employees. They're thinking about their customers, the value they provide to customers, and they're thinking about a business model. Turns out the companies who do this are actually more profitable than the S&P average. Turns out 14 times, that's 1400% more profitable if they operate this way, and they're going to last longer. So that's at the company level. At a leader level, a person who's compassionate, again, is thinking about the whole, not just themselves, not just the shareholders. So as an example, during this pandemic, a really great leader is first being a little bit vulnerable, saying, hey, right, all right, you guys, let's just be real. This is hard.
Yeah. Right? No,
a year ago, we were not planning on doing business like this. And for sure, we were not planning on doing this for a year. Let's just realize this is hard. You know, and talk about how it's hard for them. Because then when what happens is we mirror vulnerability, that makes it easier for us as employees to then talk about our own mental well-being, talk about our own challenges, our own joys. And so if the leader is talking about life and is talking about us and is talking about how valuable employees are, then I'm going to feel more safe. I'm going to feel more secure. Yeah. I'm going to give back in a way that's even stronger. And I'm going to feel more connected to that leader and company.
Study leaders as well. When you grow up as the son of a diplomat, you almost have no choice. And then when you first grow up with two very violent dictators, you start become really aware initially. But I've been very impressed with Jacinda Ardern from Prime Minister of New Zealand because of what you said, right? The vulnerability and mirroring that. A lot of the leaders that I've noticed who, you know, I don't know, come in, I'm a parent. This is my shirt. Yeah. This is what's happening. Right. We're in this situation. I've noticed that there is, you know, that mirroring of vulnerability you speak of, it draws people in. Yeah. But you know, something else that I always hear, I don't know if you hear this when you're doing speaking engagements or workshops, is people are now more afraid of being vulnerable because of quote unquote cancel culture. So they might be afraid that, oh shoot, someone's going to dig up something about me in the past. And then I'm going to be crucified. What do you say to that? Because they're like, well, I've grown but are you going to be compassionate for me? I know I did that or something that, you know, I've just noticed that happening more and more. And I'm in New York, obviously. Cuomo is in the news because rightfully so, if that's what happened. But we live in such a divisive time that news networks have been waiting for this. They're like, oh, you were criticizing this?
Sure.
Look at that.
So it's a great question. I think our willingness to be vulnerable means also the next piece of that is we're willing to be responsible for our own actions, right?
You did say that.
If I'm going to share everything with you, then I'm going to share everything with you. And if we go back to happiness is an inside job, that means I'm going to be strong. I'm going to be happy regardless of what you think.
Right.
But if I'm going to be vulnerable, that means I'm open to all of these things that you're going to have to say about what I have to say. And if I start living like that, I'm probably going to make different choices, right? Because if I do something bad and then I'm going to be able to talk about it, my life is going to get a lot harder, right? As we see on TV.
It is. And I love that you said that because, first of all, no one is perfect. But the thing is, you have to be able to take responsibility for you know, the actions and have that accountability. And so I think a lot of people think that vulnerability doesn't mean accountability. And it does. I'm not a fan of cancel culture. I believe in counseling more. I definitely lean more liberal, but I do think sometimes we can go overboard in terms of tearing down people. But I do think holding people accountable for their actions is essential. And if that happens, it happens. And it's such a balance and it's a nuance. And I think it speaks to the whole idea of that spectrum of compassion, because it's not going to look the same. At least I feel like in different environments, practice compassion for LinkedIn might be different for why you practice for yourself.
That's right.
Or another company, right? Context.
Yeah, it starts with, look, one of the challenges we have in our culture right now across the world is we're talking past each other.
Yeah.
Right. The news we're getting is all just about us. And the news, we think the other, I'm making air quotes in my other, they're reading news all about them. And so when we talk at each other, all we're focusing on is our differences.
Yeah.
But real compassion starts in how are we the same? How are we similar?
Yeah.
And among humans, we're about 98% similar and 2% different. But where do we focus? We focus only on how we're different.
Mm-hmm.
But if we really get real, it's like, hey, what do we have in common? Well, okay, we're both human. We both love our families. We both love our friends. We have plans we want to work out. Like, the list would be extraordinarily long.
It would be.
Right? Before we get to the places where we have differences.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Just wanted to stop by here before we get back to the episode. I wanted to let you all know that I do have a collective for people who are interested in developing their cultural competency skills, becoming more anti-racist. And it's a resource of things that you can do with your family, with your school, with yourself to work through your individual journey to become a better culturally competent leader. It's called UID Collective, and the link is in the show notes, but it's a mix of courses, it's a mix of resources, things you can download, and all you need to do is sign up as a member. It's a monthly membership. I'd love for you to check it out, use it with your friends, use it with your family, use it with yourself, okay? The link is in the show notes. It's called UID Collective, and it's for those of you that want to improve your cultural competency skills. Back to the episode.
I feel like we're speaking to a twin here.
Yeah.
But again, we're speaking to Scott Shute. You know, he recently received the Norman Vincent Peale Award for Positive Thinking. And I'm sure you can see why, especially with that line of dialogue. But the reason why I've said it was, I didn't mean to interrupt, and I'm sorry for that. The twin thing is, I shared with you earlier that my mission statement is use your difference to make a difference. And in the book I was writing, most of the problems we have today and throughout history have been caused because of people's inability to relate to something that was different from them, right? Whether it's religion, war, gender, whatever you think of.
That's right.
Yeah. And so hearing you say that, I'm like, yeah, it's a reinforcement of that, but it is that emphasis on the different and how it's a perceived threat, real or imagined to us, that is essentially caused anything, right? Even if it's politics, if it's gender, if it's gender identity, if it's religion, what nationality, whatever it is, sports teams. I'm an athlete and I love sports, but you know, in New York here, sometimes you see a lot of Red Sox and New York fans go at New York Yankees fans go at it. And you know, that's sure. more the joke, jovial aspect, but sure. it can go down to that simple level. Right. Sure. Yeah.
So one of my favorite quotes is from Abraham Lincoln, or at least attributed to Abraham Lincoln. And he said, I do not like that man. I must get to know him better. And, you know, I think at the root of that is this feeling that we're all really similar. But when we see somebody, and, you know, everybody's had this experience. You see somebody, they say something, it makes us angry. It violates some value in us. And instantly we go to that difference. But if we could just realize that this person is reacting something because it violates one of their values, just like I'm reacting to something that violates one of our values. And if we had a conversation about what that's like at the root and what that root is about, then maybe we could have a real conversation instead of just focusing on how it's different.
Right. Huh. It's definitely something to think about. Huh. Yeah. You also say that compassion is a strategic advantage. I know you've been touching on it, but could you elaborate more on that? What do you mean by strategic advantage?
Sure. When I talk about it at the company level, let's go deeper on that. When I say, instead of just focusing on your shareholders, the money part, focus on your customers and your employees. But if we click deeper, I define compassion like this. First, it's an awareness of others. The second is having a mindset of wishing the best for them. And the third is the courage to take action. All right. So from a company perspective, first, my customers, if I'm deeply aware of them, right? If I'm deeply aware of my customers, that's the first part. I have to know them. The second part is I want to wish the best for them. In other words, I really care about my customers and I care about the value that I can provide for them. I want to solve their problems. And then third is to take action on their behalf. So that means there's sometimes when the customer's needs perhaps outweigh my own in the short term. So as an example, at the end of the quarter, let's say that you and I are sales guys, right? And we're trying to meet our number. We're trying to hit our quota and we're not quite there, but we could sell this customer we've been working on. We could sell them something they don't need and we would hit our quota, right? And in the short term, that's good for us. But long term, we're probably going to lose that customer because we've sold them something they don't need. So in the long term, it pays off if we make decisions based on this. We deeply understand our customers. We wish the best for them and we take action on their behalf. In short term, it's some trade-offs. The same things work with employees. If we deeply understand our employees, we deeply care about them and we're trying to create a great environment for them. Sometimes we make trade-offs in the short term that's not great for our shareholders, but long term, it's great for our employees. Then we have less attrition, we have more loyal employees, and we have more creative and dedicated employees. All those things put together means we are going to deliver better solutions, more competitive solutions in the marketplace. And not to be crude, but we're going to make more money, right? We're going to be more successful as a business. We're going to last longer.
going to last longer. Huh? That's and I think it's hard for people sometimes to see past profits.
Short term.
Yeah, short term. And but what you're saying, and which is true, is that if you really focus on people, you will get the profit.
That's right. And it's not at the expense of, right? You still have to have a good business model.
Right.
You can't be completely just about others, right? You have to include yourself in it. But when you're solving for the whole and not just yourself, you're going to win.
Yeah, that's beautiful. No, that's okay. So that's on the company level. Now, if someone is listening to this and they're thinking about, well, I really like what you're saying, company level, individual level, but are there things that I can...
Yeah, works for me.
Questions, yeah,
individual.
Yeah, questions that I can come up with for myself, or, you know, because I believe you can solve many problems in the world if you ask yourself the right questions, or if you ask the right questions in general. So go ahead.
When people come and ask me, like, especially new employees, they're like, hey, I'm new here, or I'm new in career. Like, what's one piece of advice you'd give me? My advice has always been, make everybody around you better, right? Because think about that. If you are on a team, you've just started out, maybe you're on a new team, or maybe you're just new in career. What is that manager looking for? The manager is trying to solve the team's problems or the group's problems, right? And if you as an individual are making everybody around you better, and you're making the team better, you're making the big problems, when it comes time to get promoted or seen or given a raise, you're the first person on the list because you are acting like the manager is acting. You're thinking about the whole.
Yeah.
So what does that mean? It means, you know, building somebody up in a meeting. Like, we're in a meeting and I'm like, oh, hey, did you see what Jane said yesterday? You know, that was really good. Or, hey, we haven't heard from this person online. I'd like to hear what you say. Or it's taking time to be a mentor. It's being, you know, all of those things. You guys know what to do.
Yeah. But okay. So to stay in that moment there, do you have maybe 2 to 3 questions that you would, I don't know, maybe it could be more, that people need to ask themselves on a regular basis?
Let's see. I think one of them we started with, it's like, what does winning look like? Right?
Or success. Yeah.
How am I measuring success? Right? And first of all, is that success aligned with what my manager would say or what my spouse or my mom would say? Right? Yeah. So it starts there. Am I measuring success the right way?
Success, winning. Interesting. And I, by the way, the reason why I love that is that even if you start off there, you're probably going to find other questions that you will lead to, you know, will come out of that as an offshoot.
For sure.
Yeah.
Because if I start with that success question, most people ask that question, then they only answer it from a work perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But what if I include my spouse and my kids and my friends and my family and my mom? Right.
Isn't that true, Scott? Yeah. It's so true. I used to have this joke growing up. A lot of immigrants who know this, a lot of specific African immigrants and Indian, some of my Asian immigrants say this, but my parents and friends and families would say, you know, you either be a lawyer, doctor, engineer, or failure. Now, I didn't end up becoming I didn't end up becoming that. And I know initially, you know, that's one of the things when I talk to fellow Africans in the diaspora, you know, the biggest surprise is, well, how did you deal with the parents? And but I've had this conversation with my parents initially because I know why it happens, right? A lot of times because of the way we grew up and the way it's set up, you're told you got to be better.
Right.
You got to be this in order to succeed there. It's a self-preservation thing. And one conversation I've had with my parents, and we've come to agree on this over the years, is, you know, you got to let people freely define what is successful for them. Because if you're leaving it into this limited boxes, you know, even though you have the best intentions, what's happening is you're going to be coming across all these ideas. Well, you're failing. And when you ask yourself that question, if you're really self-aware, you're going to realize, well, am I failing according to my standards or my parents' standards?
Right.
Right.
And it's really useful, going back to compassion, to understand where your immigrant parents, everybody's immigrant parents, were coming from. Most immigrant parents were coming from a place of poverty. They were coming from a place of, if you could be an engineer or a doctor or a lawyer, then you could get yourself out of poverty. Then you'd have more freedom. You'd have more choices, and that would lead to more happiness.
Yeah.
And all that is true. But if you come and you can make money in a different way, or you can be successful in a different way and have all those same freedoms, then the rules change. And so it does require a different conversation. It requires a changing of the success measures, because probably that whole generation got trapped into this idea of you had to be a certain thing so that you could be happy, when really what they meant was, hey, we want you to be happy.
Yeah, no, that's, I was certainly in the case of my parents is more of, we don't want you to go through what we went through.
Exactly.
Right. We want you to do this. And this is the best way we know.
It was their learned experience, their lived experience.
Lived experience. The other aspect of lived experience is personal. And you, my friend, have a very interesting career. You've been doing this for over 20 years. But how does one, you know, I am guessing that there wasn't any field called head of mindfulness and compassion. No. when you thought about, you know, what you wanted to do. How do you become LinkedIn's head of mindfulness and compassion?
Well, my primary career has been in leadership, in customer service leadership, right? So I've led organizations that did customer service, and that culminated at LinkedIn. I was the head of customer operations. It's essentially all of the customer facing stuff that's not sales. You know, this big organization, like 1,000 people, 20 different groups, super complicated organization. That was my like day job. But what was also true for me, and what was true for me outside of work, is I have this big passion around mindfulness, or for me, spirituality. I don't talk about that at work, but that was the root of it. Mm. I had started this practice when I was 13. I started teaching contemplative mindfulness practices in college, and it's a big part of me. But at work, it was something I didn't talk about. And about 6 years ago, so about 2 years into my LinkedIn journey, while I was still in my old role, I noticed that it's such an open place. Like the CEO is talking about meditating with Headspace. The CEO is talking about compassionate leadership. And I thought, wow, maybe this is a place where I could bring my own meditation practice to work and share it. And so I started by leading, you know, one class. And the first time I was terrified, right? Because I was like, what are people going to think of me? Like, what is this going to do for my brand? And all this, you know, stupid ego stuff. You know, and there was one dude who came to that first class, and I'm sure he was just as scared as I was, because I never saw that guy again. but then there was three, and then there was five, and then it became a regular thing. And then with a bunch of volunteers, we created a mindfulness program. I raised my hand to be the executive sponsor of our mindfulness program. And I did that as a volunteer for 3 or 4 years. And then for me, the turning point was 3 years ago, our CEO, Jeff Weiner, gave the commencement address at Wharton. Right? This is a very serious and public place, you know, and a commencement address is your one piece of advice to give, right? And he was saying, look, if you're going to be successful at work and at life, be compassionate. Like, whoa, that's pretty serious for this thing at Wharton. And then the next two or three times he's on TV, that's all the reporters want to talk about. And I was thinking, okay, it's time. It's time in my career and my life for me to invest in this personally. But it's also time at LinkedIn for us to invest in this. Look, if we send 16,000 people back to their desks, 16,000 employees, with the message that compassion is the most important thing, what does that mean? Mm. So I made a pitch to our CEO, to our head of HR, and essentially created this role. And with their great support, was given kind of a blank sheet of paper to go figure it out. So that's how I did it.
And I love that you did it. And thank you for sharing that story. And that's why I wanted to bring it up, because I suspected you were in an environment that allowed you to explore that.
Right.
And the other thing that we don't talk about often is, as you ask yourself these questions about success, right? And all these things and self-awareness, one of the things you need to be aware of is the environment that cultivates who you fully are.
That's right.
Who you can be. And then you come up with your boundaries too, because the difficult part is enforcing those boundaries and having those difficult conversations, because maybe growing up, you were programmed to believe that was what you needed. But as you evolve, speaking of, you start to learn things, and maybe things that you accepted before were different. So I think that's also important, right? And then you said courage to take action.
That's right. Now, not everybody has choice, right? Let's be real. Not everybody has choice, but a lot of us have choice in how we work and who we become. And as we take more responsibility for our own lives, and as we get really clear about what our values are, it becomes really clear if the company we're working for fits those values or not.
Yes.
Right. Can I be more of my full self at this company? And if the answer is increasingly no, then the question back to myself, then there should be, is this the right place for me?
Yeah. And that point of choice is exactly why compassion leadership should be paramount, because as leaders, you're most likely in situations where people are in their first time jobs, second time jobs, dealing with multiple things, you know, stigmas, microaggressions, but they have to pay the bills. So it's not like they can just leave the job, but at the same time, you want to make sure that they feel seen, heard, and understood, as New York plays in the background. But you want to make sure that that's the case. And you were talking earlier, you need to be able to add value to the world. And this is how we create that compassionate world, you know, because eventually you empower someone enough to be able to make that decision for themselves, especially if they don't have the choice at that moment.
So, yeah. When we treat our employees in this way, and when we create environments where people can really be their full authentic selves, they can blossom, right? They can bring their full creative powers to work. Just think about your own life in a time when you felt really alive and creative and felt like you could pour your whole self into a project versus another project where it's like, oh man, this sucks, but I have a deadline on Thursday. So I guess I'm just going to get it done. Like, think about the result of those two projects and what the company would rather have.
Yeah, that's so true. That's so true. Wow. Yeah, I could talk to you all day, but we have to close soon. So your book, The Full Body Yes, change your work and your world from the inside out. How can people get it?
Yeah, you can go to any place books are sold, but you can find out more at thefullbodyyes.com. Find all the details and find it from your favorite retailer.
All right.
Or bookstore.
I'll make sure I put that in the show notes and access to your personal website as well will be there. I have to close with this. My mission statement, as you already know at this point, is use your difference to make a difference. So I usually ask my guests this. Scott, how do you use your difference to make a difference?
Wow. Look, there's not very many people. This is what I've come to understand and believe. There's not many people who combine this deep, like, spiritual practice and deep, you know, work practice in this way. So I think that's how I'm different. And I'm trying to bring this book out because I think it combines these two things. And it's for everybody, because I think the stories are interesting. But it's for people who are working, especially, this is the center of the bullseye, for the people who are working and sometimes they feel like, oh man, is this all there is?
Fair enough. Fair enough. Wow. Thank you so much for spending time with us. I'm excited for you. When the book comes out, the podcast will be out by the time the book is out. So please grab a copy, and I'm wishing you nothing but success with this.
Thank you so much. I so appreciate it. And thanks to everybody who's listened today. I appreciate you.
Pleasure's mine. Kings, queens, and royalty. Till next time, use your difference to make a difference.
You've just been listening to the As Told by Nomads podcast. For more ways to reach out to Tayo and to use your difference to make a difference, head over to www.tayoroxon.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.